And welcome back. Roland Smith with Carl Sabatino. Our guest at this moment is a gentleman by the name of Hal Bidlack. Let me add some more to that. Lieutenant Colonel Hal Bidlack. Dr. Hal Bidlack, former political science professor at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado. So welcome, Colonel. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Retired, I should put.
Yeah, retired. Yes, I should have put that in there. A lot of us are retired, but we're still doing stuff.
Indeed.
You know, I want you to say hello to my friend Carl Sabatino.
Good afternoon, Mr. Sabatino.
How are you, sir?
Doing well, sir, and yourself?
We are there, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So he doesn't know. What is really interesting about Hal Bidlack is that I've known him for a number of years, and I respect not only his mind, but the brilliance in the way he's able to put things together in a political science context with his students. I've spoken to his class and to the Air Force Academy a couple of different times, and it was a rewarding experience for me. But what a lot of people don't know about Captain or Colonel Bidlack is that he is a devotee of American history. He can speak as if he is Alexander Hamilton, and does this as a project, as also as a little commercial enterprise, in debates with Jefferson and others around the country. So, Carl, we are going to interview Alexander Hamilton, and you have the first question.
Well, it's a pleasure, Mr. Hamilton, having you on the broadcast.
Indeed, it would be.
With the creation of our new nation, what do you see, from your perspective, are the most important elements that we have to focus on as this nation comes online?
Well, as I review the history since the founding, and as I look in your day back at what you have accomplished with what we gave you as a legacy, I believe that the fundamental challenge you have is that you want to consider yourself Jeffersonians, while at your heart you are Hamiltonians. You know, Mr. Jefferson believed that man is good, and that if government would simply get out of the way, all things would be possible through charity and good works. I believed, as I said in Federalist Number 6, that man is ambitious, vindictive, and rapacious. We are selfish creatures. I offer as evidence that I am correct and that Mr. Jefferson is wrong, as he was wrong in most things, as evidence I offer simply the totality of the entire human experience. There is not a single idyllic society that has not fallen into despotism. And so as you balance these issues of liberty and order, protecting as much liberty as possible while protecting individual rights, I believe one of your justices once remarked, "Your right to swing your arm ends where my nose begins." And I believe that's a good way of looking at our Constitution. But I believe in your day, you keep this Jeffersonian veneer to make yourselves feel good. But at the end of the day, you are thoroughly a Hamiltonian nation, and you are the better for it.
Mr. Hamilton, we have problems today with our Congress. And in fact, it has probably one of the lowest ratings that's ever been had in history. I think it was down to less than 10% of people approving congressional action. What was it like in your day?
Well, I hate to admit to your audience that during the Revolutionary War, I twice saved our Congress from capture by the British. In hindsight, I'm not entirely sure that was a good thing to have done. I once remarked that three-quarters of our troubles come from Congress, and I told one of your congressmen in your day that what I wrote during the war. I said that three-quarters of Congress is incompetent, and the remainder of that three-quarters are corrupt. It seemed this bizarre notion of detesting your Congress while constantly reelecting it. And I am mystified by this action, because in our day, Mr. Jefferson was a radical. He believed we should change the government every year. I thought that was nonsensical, because you want expertise, and expertise comes with some time. But you don't seem to hold them responsible. And I think we believed that you would be turning the rascals out. But in your day, you complain continuously, and then every November you dutifully go and reelect 9 of 10 of them.
As you look forward, Mr. Hamilton, on into the future, as you have devised this nation, what do you see as the strengths of this country? Where are the focal points as opposed to the rest of the European community?
Well, the European community is... I wish to be as respectful as I possibly can, and I shall be toward England, because England was a wonderful model in many ways, but not as good as our country. The petty primacies of those petty little regional powers, wherein you are based on your birth, I think that one of the greatest benefits of our society is the ability of someone like myself, who was born, as I will say, of ignoble birth. My parents were married, but not to one another. Mr. Adams most famously called me the bastard brat of a Scotch peddler. But growing up in unspeakable poverty in the Caribbean, on an island with 600 whites and 19,000 enslaved Africans, I developed a loathing of slavery and a love of education. And I'm not a modest man. My brilliance was noted by others, and I was sent to the United States to be educated. Mr. Jefferson, my great adversary, his first memory was being carried on a silken pillow by a slave woman. Such upbringings cannot help but influence one's thinking. But I think that from my perspective, what makes this nation so great in my day and in yours is that there is the potential for anyone, the rich, the wise, the well-born, all can succeed based on the gravitas of their intellect and discipline of their character.
Is it true historically that you foresaw the Civil War in this country?
Mr. Jefferson's war, indeed, I anticipated that we might have this. In fact, during the Revolutionary War, I actually proposed we raised African soldiers, that we take these enslaved Africans and put them into our army. And not surprisingly, the Southern states disagreed. And during that time, there were other abolitionists. There were others who hated slavery. But I was the only one that I know of who believed in the actual equality of intellect. I once wrote to my friend that I believe their facilities equal to ours, and any differences are a function of education and not native ability. I did anticipate that this would be the case. And Mr. Jefferson, for his many flaws, I do not fault him on slavery particularly, because, as I say, he was born into a system. He once referred to slavery as having a wolf by the ears. You cannot hold on, but you dare not let go.
Yeah, Mr. Hamilton, did you like George Washington?
Oh, I respected General Washington as a father figure. My own father had gone on a three-month trip when I was a young lad under 10, and he never returned. General Washington, as I was right to Tobias Lear, his secretary, upon his passing, I said he was an aegis very essential to me. He was a father in more ways than I can possibly describe, and he considered me a son. And so he is the greatest of all Americans. He is the indispensable American. This is one of the few areas in which Mr. Jefferson and I agree, our respect for General Washington and our loathing of Aaron Burr.
Let's go to Mr. Burr.
You don't need to, sir.
Is it time now, Mr. Hamilton, to perhaps forgive Mr. Burr?
Well, it depends on what you intend to forgive him for, sir. This is a man who, in his day, as the sitting vice president of the United States, gunned a man down. Now, can you imagine in your era if your vice president shot a man? So it is stunning. He, following his interview with me at Weehawken, he set about in the southern parts of the country, and we're not quite sure what he was doing, but he was apparently trying to raise a rebellion where the Northeast would break off and join with Mexico. He wrote a letter to his daughter, "You will be Empress of Mexico by Christmas." This is a man who started a company, he called the Manhattan Company, which had its sole purpose to bring water to the island of Manhattan, which is a noble venture. But he arranged to have in its charter that it could loan money. He promptly took a $112,000 loan from the Manhattan Company and never paid it back. And the Manhattan Company limped along for years as a corrupt shell until it merged with the Chase Company and became your Chase Manhattan Bank. So your question is, what does Mr. Burr need to be forgiven for? He lasted 10 days on General Washington's staff before he was sacked for reading private correspondences. And he had dalliances that I shall not speak to, because no doubt ladies are listening. You may decide to forgive Mr. Burr. I have my other objection.
Well, this has been more than fascinating.
I thank you. We've been talking to Alexander Hamilton, played by Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel, retired, Hal Bidlack, Dr. Hal Bidlack, in Colorado. And Hal, let's go back to your personality at the moment. Thank you for that. I mean, whatever drew you to want to impersonate Hamilton in a quick response, please?
Well, it was a colleague of mine who does Jefferson wanted someone to argue with. And he talked me into doing it. And I became such a fascinating character because Hamilton made the critical mistake of dying before his enemies. And so his history was written by others. But when you dig into it, you find he's the founder of our economic and our legal systems and one of the perhaps the most brilliant of all the founding fathers. So he was a fascinating character along a number of dimensions and flawed as a human.
Well, let us do this again because this is not enough time. Not enough time.
Thank you very much, Hal, for talking with us.
Thank you for the surprise.
Wish you the best.
May I aim them at my website?
Yes, please. What is that?
Quickly.
If people are interested in booking Hamilton or learning more, they can go to HamiltonLives.com. All one word, HamiltonLives.com.
Thank you so very much. We'll have you back. Carl Sabatino, Roland Smith. This is Smith Sabatino. Till next time.
America. Individuals and businesses with tax problems. Listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-289-1668. That's 800-289-1668. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-289-1668.